This hour, we're taking your calls with Robert Young Pelton. You've heard what we've been talking about, so jump on board when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. George Norrie with you, along with Robert Young Pelton. And don't forget, his websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Take some time to read some of the incredible information he has there. Robert, is our Constitution in jeopardy?
Absolutely. The founding fathers had actually just come back from, you know, just finished a war with an autocratic country called England, and wanted to make sure that democracy, as messy as it was, would be preserved. It's very difficult to keep a democracy going.
What was that TV show that used to say democracy is a poor form of government, but all the others are far worse?
Democracy requires responsibility from everyone. You know, we have to stop and think, are we damaging the concept of democracy? And it's hard sometimes to realize that it's on us. It's not necessarily on the politicians. It's on us to keep democracy going.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. Let's take some calls. First-time caller Zion's with us in Lewiston, Maine. Welcome to the program. Hi, Zion.
Hi. I just had a question. I was wondering if you thought it was likely that there could be like an alliance between North Korea, China, you know, Russia, all of those countries. After all, North Korea has been launching missiles and all that. And thanks for having me on, by the way.
And Zion, let me ask you a quick question. Are you the young man who was born blind and you're looking for some technology to help you see again?
Yes.
How's that coming along?
That actually went good. I was successful thanks to great people in the community who helped me with the GoFundMe.
So you got what you needed then?
Yes.
All right, good for you. Okay, Robert, what about your question, his thoughts on all these rogue nations teaming together?
That sounds like an interesting story. Well, China is too interwoven with the U.S. and the world market to do anything kinetic, you know, or dramatic. North Korea, all their missiles just fall in the ocean. So it's interesting up until you realize that the range of their missiles aren't that far. But his point is actually interesting, because these countries do get together to do things like cyber warfare, espionage, you know, what we talk about, hybrid warfare, where below the kinetic level, where they're just degrading different nations. So they actually do work together. And there's been many instances where North Korea and China have sort of pointed at each other. And we don't really have a relationship with North Korea, and they don't really have an army that could take over any country. So they offer their services mostly on the cyber side.
Is Kim a nutcase?
No, we like people to think that. You know, and anybody we don't like, we say they're crazy. Saddam's crazy. You know, Castro's crazy. He's the son of a very popular leader. Whether he's doing a good job or not is up for debate. But, you know, within the limited means he has, he wreaks a lot of havoc.
You know, I'd make a great interview for you, and I'd love to have you and him on the program, but Raul Castro, the history that guy must have in his head, huh?
Oh, my God. Is he still alive?
He's still alive. He's way up there. But, I mean,
wow.
His brother's gone. Che Guevara's gone. But he was there. He was right there with them.
Well, you know, I'm not a fan of communists. So I was in Colombia with the FARC rebels, who are Marxists, right? And I was drinking with Mano Jojoy. He's dead now. But he was the head of their military. And he was explaining the Marxist philosophy of the FARC. And I said, don't pump that Marxist sunshine up my you-know-what. And he got quite mad, and he suggested they should kidnap me and I would learn Marxism better.
Oh, jeez.
So I don't get along with them. So.
How did you get involved in the explorer and the fascination with world events?
Well, I was a successful businessman. You know, my company's on the Inc. 500 list. And I took a month off every year to get away and just do what I really enjoyed. And it dawned on me, you know, with my success, that why don't I spend 12 months of the year doing what I enjoyed? I originally did expeditions and less, you know, dangerous things. And then a bunch of journalists said, well, you know, you think it's dangerous to go to Africa or Borneo, but try, you know, going to these rebel groups. So I started meeting with rebel groups and being in wars and setting up interviews for journalists. And then that's when that book, The World's Most Dangerous Places, came from, because I felt I had to write this down. And literally within a six-month period, I had a TV series on Discovery. You know, my book was on the New York Times bestseller list.
Yep.
And that was my thing. That's what I did.
Did you ever find Joseph Kony?
Kony's in DRC. And, yeah, I'm still writing my book, and I will go down there and chat him up. He's been forgotten by most of the world, but not by me.
Is he still doing what he's doing?
No, he's not doing that well. He's being held by the ADF,
he's a prisoner
under tables. So he still exists, and I've been tracking Kony since 1996. So I was Kony before Kony was cool.
Didn't Castro turn to us for help first too?
Well, Cuba again thought America would be an ideal partner in creating a democracy, and he was wrong. You know, Africa's full of stories of, you know, intelligent, democratic leaders who suddenly got shot or disappeared because of the CIA, because they were labeled as Marxists, you know, and they basically reached out to all countries for help, and we just thought they'd be better off dead.
Is Iran truly an evil empire?
Well, the rulers of Iran are a little strange, and you have to admit that they're not our best friends. They're not Israel's best friends. There has been very little evolution in Iran, you know, under sanctions. You know, you remember Syria under sanctions. It was just frozen. You know, people make fun of Cuba for all those American cars. Damascus was like that. So, you know, Iran is kind of frozen in time. And Iraq was like that as well. So at some point, something will happen. Now, will it happen internally or externally? I don't know. But it's in the radar.
Now, the Shah, who was one of our supporters, wasn't he like a bad guy?
Well, he was an autocrat. He was like Putin. He just basically stole all the money and figured that if he ran the country, it was all his. And the people suffered underneath him because they didn't get, you know, their fair share. And this was the reason for most of the Arab Spring uprisings, is that these autocrats plunder the country so badly that the people can't even buy bread. I mean, it sounds funny, but in Kazakhstan, you know, they doubled the price of heating oil and fuel and things like that, which was just outrageous. So they rose up.
Didn't he have a party for multi-million dollars when his country was starving to death?
Yes. Jeez. I did. That was not a good PR move.
No, and then his agency, what was it called, Savak or something like that?
Yeah. Well, don't forget, we put him there, and we
did. We propped him up.
I mean, we could go for hours, if not weeks, about the mistakes America has made in fixing other countries.
Big. You're right. Let's go to Brendan, Austin, Texas. Take it away. Hi, Brendan.
Hey, thanks so much to your guest and Georgie and the Coast to Coast audience. Thanks, all of you guys.
Thank you. By the way, thank you for being you. You're a great listener and a great caller, and I just wanted you to know that. I haven't had a chance to tell you that.
Hey, thanks so much. And we might not agree with everything, but we can still talk about it and be civil.
That's right.
All right, so I was going to talk about exactly what you guys were talking about, and I just wanted to mention super quick that I don't know if you had read about the fact that Russia says they're putting out rocks to use as drones to guide munitions into the Ukraine. I thought that was really strange. Spy rocks. Yeah, but so for the last 70 years, the United States has been using foreign interventionism and, you know, like you guys were saying, we prop up these bad guys and then they leave behind stacks of bodies. You know, we take out democratically elected leaders and put in dictators. And that's kind of why Iran is so upset. And we've done that all over the place. But what I wanted to talk about was us doing that in 2013, which I'm not a fan of a lot of the presidents we've had, and not a fan of Trump. I'm not a fan of Biden. But what Biden did even before he was president in 2013 with the Ukraine was they were spending billions of dollars there, and Russia was doing the same thing. Both the Russia and the United States were destabilizing the Ukraine for one another's, you know, goals. So we don't really care about the Ukrainian people, but the reason that I was calling was because we had a phone call from the Estonian foreign minister and the European Union foreign policy chief that during the 2013 Ukrainian civil war, the CIA had hired snipers to shoot both sides both the police and the civilian protesters. And they started doing autopsies, started realizing that the munitions and weapon platforms that these were coming from, were from coalition Western troops. And they called off all the autopsies. And this phone call is recorded. You can go and look it up. It's on CNN, Guardian, Yahoo News. You can listen to the phone call. And they told them to stop doing the autopsies because we realized it was coming from us. So we play dirty, and so did they. And that was my comment. But I do have a question about what Iran said.
Sure.
In that they're going to respond to our assassination of their general last year because it's the anniversary just passed. And they just said, I think today or yesterday, that they're going to attack us from the inside of America. So what is your guess, thinking on that? Is he worried about that?
All right. Robert, what do you think?
Well, I'm not personally worried about it, but it is a reality. When you assassinate a high-ranking person within a government like Soleimani, there is some payback for that. And countries like Israel, UAE, Russia do assassinate people that threaten their existence, whether they're in America or in their home country. So I would expect that using proxies and using cutouts and using people that hopefully aren't traced back to Iran, there are going to be multiple attempts to kill high-level officials. It's not new, but it keeps getting repeated, you know, on the anniversary of Soleimani. At the same time, Israel is wreaking havoc on Iranian proxies in places like Syria and also, you know, bombing weapons depots and things like that. So there's a lot of pressure on Iran, and Iran wants to exert the pressure not necessarily on Israel directly, but on the allies of Israel.
So, Robert, why would they be so dumb to go public with that and let the world know their intentions?
Well, politically, obviously, they're saving face. They're talking tough, and they're saying this and saying that. Iranians are very skilled at espionage and, doing things that we don't necessarily... I mean, look at the Houthis in Yemen, right? We have guys with flip-flops basically winning a war against the Saudis, and they're using Iranian support. And this is something that drives Saudi Arabia crazy because they're supposedly fighting. They want to fight Iran, but they can't fight it directly, and Iran is winning in their backyard. So this is how hybrid warfare works. It's not a direct conflict between two nations.
East of the Rockies, Tim's with us, truck driving in Indiana. Hello, Tim.
Hey, George. Good to meet you. I got two questions for your host. I hope we can answer both of them here. One might tie to the other one. It seems like the United States used to have a cohesive vision, and it didn't matter which party was in charge. And we made mistakes in Vietnam. We supported dictatorships, obviously, which was wrong. But we did support a lot of pro-democracy movements, at least in Eastern Europe and other places. And some people came to us if they wanted freedom, at least initially. And then, like in Cuba, they thought we weren't going to help them, but at least we had a vision, it seemed like. And like we want, and now China has a vision. It's autocratic, or at least, you know, it's an anti-democratic movement, and that seems to be inspiring more people than what we did. And when do you think we lost that cohesion? Was it at the end of the Cold War, or was it the beginning of the war on terror in 2001? And the other question has to do with the divisiveness. I'm a Republican or conservative, well, tenuously Republican. And I'm disappointed in both sides. I think both sides are supporting policies that are antithetical to a constitutional democratic republic. And I think both of them are supporting things that are crazy. And no one's calling – but people are loyal. They're not going to call it. Republicans aren't calling out their side, and Democrats aren't calling out their side. And what do you think is the origin of this?
Well, you bring up a very, very good point. You know, America's always had an enemy, an external enemy, whether it's communism or Nazis or whatever, that unites people. We don't have that big enemy anymore. You know, if you asked Americans on the street who the biggest enemy was, they'll probably mention the other political party that they're fighting over some minor detail, whether it's critical race theory or anti-vaxxing or whatever. And this is really dangerous because Americans are, I won't say they're aggressive, but they're looking to change things, to do things, make things better, fix things. And not having a unified external enemy has led us to focus on each other. And that's what the listener brings up, is why are we fighting amongst each other? Now, that's tribalism. So places like Afghanistan, where the tribes fight all the time, or Syria, you can unite them instantly by creating a larger outside threat. So that's a lesson that we need to learn from, let's say, less developed countries like Afghanistan or Iraq or whatever, where there's clear divisions between religions, tribes, et cetera.
Robert, I am totally convinced that the COVID-19 was created in that Wuhan lab and that we helped fund them. And assuming I'm correct, as a lot of people are jumping on that bandwagon, what in the heck were we trying to do?
Well, I don't know if that's true or not, but I can tell you this, whether it's bird flu or Ebola, there's a lot of things out there that can be carried very quickly in today's society. And whether it's created by mad scientists in a hollow volcano, or whether it's just a function of interaction between animal species and humans, what we do know is that we can't stop it. You know, with Omicron, people realizing that this is something that we don't have any tools. I mean, we can get vaccinated, we can reduce the effects of it, but we are a global sort of petri dish now.
Exactly.
And when people get on planes and, you know, look at these aviation maps and look how many planes are in the air and how many people are traveling, we are very susceptible to pandemics now.
What do you think of Rand Paul accusing Fauci of lying before Congress, basically?
I think, you know, you're picking a fight with the wrong guy. We have to respect science. Fauci's got a very, very good background, you know, with the AIDS and everything. He has been beaten up. He's a civil servant, you know. He's in charge of doing what he can do best. I think the enemy is really ignorance. We let too many sort of rumors and conspiracies float around, and people then say, well, I don't know about this vaccine. I don't know about that COVID. It's a virus, you know. It's like malaria. It's like anything else. If you follow the right procedures, you can reduce your chances of catching it and spreading it.
Herd immunity, Robert.
Well, herd immunity for the survivors. Remember that. So whether it's Ebola or SARS, the survivors can talk about it, but those that died can't.
And what's this documentary you're working on?
It's about the coup attempt in Libya, where a bunch of mercenaries got together and tried to knock over the government and obviously take control of the oil, and it failed spectacularly. So I'm still working on it, so you'll see it in a few months, but it's a very funny caper film.
How is Libya functioning right now? Who's in charge?
Nobody. They have a government. They're gonna try to hold elections. There's only 6 million people and more oil than they know what to do with, and it's right across the street from Europe. It is probably the easy, most fixable country on Earth, but everybody keeps jumping in there and stirring the pot. So it's a good history lesson on why things never get fixed.
But, why didn't Gaddafi share some of that with his constituents?
Well, he did. I mean, as total dictator, he was a tool. If you liked Gaddafi, he gave you something. If he didn't like you, he beat you up and killed you. I mean, it was a tool. You know, it's very hard to run an oil-rich country as a democracy. Oil is almost like a poison, whether it's Equatorial Guinea or whether it's Libya or whether it's Saudi Arabia. You don't see a lot of oil-rich countries, except maybe Canada, Mexico, and America. But the list is very short.
Robert, we're going to come back and take final calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, Lynn Andrews joins us as we talk about shamanism and consciousness. Looking forward to that. Make sure you're part of the program. We'll be back in a moment with Robert Young Pelton and take final calls with him as we talk about world events indeed. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you. I'm back with our final segment with Robert Young Pelton as we talk about world events. Let's go back to the phones. Walter in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Hello, Walt.
Happy New Year, George.
Thank you, my friend. How you feeling? Everything good?
Pretty good, George. I was telling Gene I'll be 71 next month, so I'm still kicking there.
Happy. Keep calling.
Yeah. George, with all due respect to Mr. Pelton, he's a custom knife maker, and I wouldn't expect him to make some of the statements that he's made. I would assume that he was a very conservative guy. I have quite a few knives here. I must have hundreds of knives here, and I collect, as you know, firearms and knives as well as firearms. And I just would not expect him to make a statement, rating Biden a 5 and with foreign relations and Trump a 0. I mean, I just don't understand that.
Well, let's find out why. That's his opinion, which he's more than entitled to. Robert, jump on board.
Well, the question was, what did I think of Trump handling Putin? And if you remember in 2018 when they met, there was a discussion and some concern by U.S. intelligence agencies that Russia had interfered in various means in the election. And there was a lot of evidence to support, you know, CIA, FBI, whatever, conclusions. And President Trump at the time disagreed with those intelligence agencies and sided with Vladimir Putin. Now, that was kind of a shock to most people that he would override the intelligence apparatus and go with his gut, as they said. And throughout the, you know, the 4 years that President Trump was in power, there was not a sense of cracking down on autocratic nations. And remember, he called Sisi his favorite dictator, and he spent a lot of time meeting with Jared Kushner as well, with MBS and MBZ, to create the Abraham Accord. So my opinion is still stands, that, and it's got nothing to do with my political beliefs. It's an assumption that I'm a conservative or a liberal, I'm neither. But he cultivated relationships with autocrats, and Biden is doing the opposite. Now, the problem with Biden is that he's not actually showing us what it looks like to be the most powerful nation on earth, and so we'll have
I think at this point he was a better vice president than president. What do you think?
Well, you don't have a lot of choice in America. You got sort of two people that lead each party, and you got to call your shots. And I'm not a fan of the two-party system. I think we should have more variety in political choices.
Let's go to Lady in the Valley. That's out there in Alaska. Hello, Lady.
Hey, George. Been a little touch of a while.
Hope you're doing well.
I'm still in my skin.
Well, that's good.
Hey, I want to wish Corny a belated happy birthday, and may the Lord bless his oncoming days.
Well, thank you.
And I was listening, this is not my subject matter, but I'm listening to y'all talk about the flu, and I'm a baby boomer. And George, you too. You remember back when we were going to school and going to work, and we had them flus and them nasty, gnarly crustaceans?
We had all kinds of stuff. We had all kinds of things.
Okay, well, now when we get the flu, it's the new boogeyman. That's the way I feel about it. And the reason that I called in is back in the spring of 2000, I had a dream. I was taking care of an elder. I called Art Bell about it in 2001. George, I told you about it back in 2003. I had a dream that I was in a house that had not been built yet, that I'm now in. I was taking care of an elder who was getting kidney dialysis over in Anchorage. That morning I had a dream, and in that dream there was boots hitting the ground. It was a low altitude drop.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking out the windows of a house that wasn't even built yet, and I went back into a boiler room that wasn't even built yet, and I told my elder about the dream. I drove her in to get her treatment. We're standing there outside smoking a cigarette. A Native girl walks up. She didn't look good. I asked her if she was okay. She said no, she'd had a dream. She'd had a dream that there were soldiers everywhere. And my elder, she flipped that cigarette. She whipped that wheelchair around, and she said, I don't want to hear no more. And she went inside the building. This spring coming now is 22 years. And in the Hebrew alphabet, numbers have meaning. 22 is omega. Now, my question to your guest is, do you think it's going to be China who are tenacious, or do you think it's going to be Putin?
With troops, you mean, in Alaska?
Yes, sir, because right now we're a house divided. What's going on, the way we just folded in Afghanistan, we just gave them folks there enough toys for Armageddon.
Robert, I don't think any troops are going to hit ground in Alaska, but you go ahead.
No, and this is why we're talking about hybrid warfare, because it isn't like the old days where you would have to fire a shot to start a war. There are countries that are constantly degrading the American system, whether it's the political system, the financial system, the religious system, and these people want to keep us weakened. And when I say these people, I mean like Russia, like China, like Iran, like North Korea, and whether they're hacking businesses, whether they're sort of stirring up dissension amongst politicians or, you know, causing discord, this is one of the levels of hybrid warfare. And just as you see Putin poised outside Ukraine, he's already got a piece of Ukraine. He's just trying to see how much more he can get. So this is a very subtle form of aggression that we can't really react to publicly. You know, we have to do it on the same level. So the attack has already happened. We are being attacked by these people.
Yeah, the troops you see are technological troops, probably, huh?
There are soldiers. Okay, I remember the Internet Research Agency, the ones that goes on Facebook and posts silly things about Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. These are GRU members who are trained in psychological warfare, who are looking for hot buttons, looking to cause rumors and cause dissent inside America. This is part of the military training. You know, on my Twitter feed, I posted the manual for psychological operations. This is an element of war.
Let's go to the birthday boy, Cornelius in Louisiana. You got a little birthday mention there, Cornelius.
Yeah, I know, lady. She was in the Air Force here at England Air Force Base then. It was a tactical air command, and that's where my dad served. And he was a Korean War vet and stuff. He worked on jet engines and stuff. Well, Mr. Robert Young Pelton, I'm glad you're on tonight. I sort of disagree with you. I was a military police officer trained in biological warfare. And you're right, they're using PSYOPs, the Communist Chinese and the Red Russians and stuff like that, because I'm mainly trained against the Russians. But what they're trying to divide us, but they've infiltrated the school system and stuff without us teaching civics, free enterprise. After I left school in 79 and joined the military police corps, we stopped teaching civics and free enterprise. We need to start teaching that and teaching what America's really about. We're not a democracy, Robert Young Pelton. Benjamin Franklin said this: we're a representative republic if we can keep it. That's what the people asked Benjamin Franklin. And so I just believe, Mr. Pelton, sometimes the CIA makes mistakes and stuff like that, just like MI5 and MI6. But our intelligence agencies give out false information, too, to try to create different situations. But like you said, Russia and China do the same thing. This Black Lives Matter movement, and I'm against the Black Lives Matter movement because it's a Maoist movement. The two founders of it said that they're Maoists and stuff. Antifa. The Democratic Party says there's no such thing as Antifa. It is. They burn them cities, and Black Lives Matter along with them burn cities. Whereas January 6th, you didn't see all that burning and stuff. Now, they tore up the Capitol and stuff, and they left even before Trump was through with it. You have a guy named Epps. FBI had him on the 10 most wanted list. He's telling everybody, go in the Capitol, go in the Capitol. Then you can see the other Trump supporters saying, oh, no, he's a Fed. He's a Fed. So this is like, to me, January 6th is a false flag operation. The FBI knows about it, maybe even the CIA and stuff. President Trump wanted to use the military police to put down the rebellion before it even started. But Nancy Pelosi and Mitch McConnell, those two sergeants of arms of the Senate and the Congress, oh, no, we can't do that. The FBI in Norfolk warned the people saying that they're coming to destroy Washington, D.C.
Well, yeah, but the president's own family really echoed him to say something. Robert?
I think what we're hearing, you know, with all due respect, is that we're talking to an American who distrusts Americans. And he's exactly right by saying that we're under attack by Russia, China, Iran, North Korea. And what I've been trying to say all evening, which I think makes my point perfectly, is that they're shaping thoughts and ideas.
Yes.
So we have a patriot who's served in the military who distrusts other Americans when I believe that the enemy is quite clear. It is foreign nations that want to weaken our unity. So, I don't want to argue with anybody about what I'm saying. All I want to point out is that if you think that the country's being destroyed by another American, you have to look past that.
Let's go to Tom in Baltimore, Maryland. Hello, Thomas. Go ahead.
Hi. I'd like Mr. Pelton to clarify his position on Libya. Do you really expect us to believe in this audience that the United States went there for humanitarian reasons to help the Libyan people?
I didn't say that. What I said was we provided command and control support plus air support for the bombing runs made by, you know, France. So I didn't say we went there for humanitarian reasons.
You didn't say anything about supporting the people.
No, what I said was that Gaddafi was under threat from his own people, and the revolution started without us, and we supplied some synchronization and intelligence gathering for the airstrikes.
Do you think Gaddafi could have saved himself, or was it too late?
I think it was too late. He was very isolated from the people. The fascinating thing was that he'd become our friend. Remember, after a long period of threatening him, and even bombing him, suddenly he became Europe's friend. He started traveling around and meeting and greeting people, but he was ignoring his own people. So ultimately, you know, I've been to Libya many times and spent all night many times talking about Libya with Libyans.
I recall that Reagan bombed them, right? And he killed a wife and a son, didn't he?
There's no evidence to support that. Gaddafi invented the dead child. So it's a
trust. Really?
Story.
Jeez.
Yeah. And he lived in a huge compound, so he was not physically harmed in that bombing run, nor were...
But he straightened up after that, didn't he?
Yes, and this is the interesting thing, is that for many years he was funding all kinds of rebel groups and causing all kinds of problems all around the world. He was one of the major sponsors of terrorism in Europe, and he cleaned up his act when he realized that we can reach out and touch you, and that's probably a lesson to every dictator today. That America can reach out and touch you if you want to take it too far.
Tom in Riverside, California is with us. Hey, Thomas, go ahead.
Hey, thank you, George. Yeah, Robert, I don't really agree with a lot of it. I think some of the callers are telling you that America has been taken for a ride. And that was started with, you know, in 1963 on a street in Dallas at high noon when Robert Kennedy was not only killed, or not Robert, but John Kennedy was not only killed, he was made an example of. And we've been on a ride ever since. The CIA's taken us on a ride. And you seem to be in your game when there's debauchery and savoir faire all over the place. That's your thing. So I'm opposing what you're saying. I'm glad that Putin is in charge. He's got a brain. He makes sense. And he sees America as a threat, and so does China, and we are a threat. But when I say we, I don't mean we. I'm not in that. And I think a lot of the callers are telling you that they don't like what America is doing, and Trump is the best chance we got. I hope he gets back in there. What happened was a good thing on the 6th. Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, is that who you're with? You know, okay, that's much.
I didn't hear you say that you supported them too, Robert.
I didn't say anything. I pointed out that when we point to Vladimir Putin, a known dictator and killer of his own people, as somebody who thinks straight and is somebody we should listen to, and we compare that to, you know, saying Biden's weak, and, you know, we have to really stop thinking about our country being split in two, because that's exactly what they want us to be, split in two.
Exactly. Robert, we're out of time. Let's keep in touch. You're one of a kind, my friend. Robert Young Pelton with us. Again, website's all linked up at coasttocoastam.com, and he's got his books out there, and he'll be coming out with a new documentary, so just keep going to his website. Up next, let's talk about a little magic and consciousness on Coast to Coast.